The headline, Syria calls on Turkey to stop its hostile behavior and end the deadly airstrikes on its territory. Tehran criticizes London for supporting a Saudi-funded television channel that propagates terror and violence in Iran. And Ukraine is pushing for UN Security Council action against Russian airstrikes targeting its infrastructure. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour, Syria is strongly critical of Turkey over the recent wave of airstrikes targeting its territory, calling for the deadly operations to be immediately halted.
The current military hostilities are a continuation of Turkey's long-standing hostile behaviors. First, it undermines previous agreements reached between Syria and Turkey, and moreover, it leads to civilian casualties. Neither Syria nor countries in this or any other country will agree with it.
The diplomat said that Syria deems the security of its borders with Turkey as extremely important. He, however, said that such security should be obtained through dialogue and cooperation rather than attacks or incursion. He also called Turkey's airstrikes a breach of both international law and Syria's sovereignty. The deputy minister made the remarks during the 19th summit of the Astana peace process, which aims to find a political solution to the crisis in Syria. Turkey started hitting areas in northeastern Syria 2 years ago, but it has intensified the strike since last week, when an explosion in Istanbul killed 6 people. Ankara blames the bombing on Kurdish militant groups based in Iraq and Syria. According to the Turkish defense minister, attacks on 500 targets have already killed over 250 militants. Iran's representative at the UN Human Rights Council taking the Western countries to task for their double standards on human rights issues and their biased approach toward the situation of women in Iran. Khatami also said that using human rights as a tool for political purposes of specific groups of Western countries is appalling and disgraceful. She particularly criticized Germany for having supplied chemical weapons to the government of Saddam Hussein during the 1980s war with Iran. The special session of the Human Rights Council on the alleged violation of human rights in Iran was held at Germany's initiative. Tehran has repeatedly censured foreign intervention in its affairs. Elsewhere, Tehran has strongly slammed the UK's support for a London-based, Saudi-funded anti-Iran TV channel. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the British Foreign Secretary's claim to taking, quote, the importance of free, honest, and open journalism incredibly seriously was just an empty allegation. He added that the channel supported by James Cleverly is freely propagating terror and violence against Iranian nation and its national security. Kanani reminded Cleverly that his backing for the Saudi-funded Iran International Channel amounts to supporting the anti-Iran war room. Iran's intelligence ministry has designated Iran International Channel as a terrorist organization over its role in stoking the recent riots in the country. Israel keeps up its settlement expansion despite several UN resolutions labeling the settlements illegal under international law. We've discussed the issue in our news review program. Let's have a listen. News review, where we look deeper into some of the top stories of the day. On this segment of the program, Israel has approved the construction of hundreds of new settler units in the occupied West Bank, defying international outcry over the measure. According to Palestinian media, the regime is to seize 120 hectares of land in Wadi Rahal village, south of the city of Bethlehem. The plan also includes the construction of 7,000 more settler units in Bethlehem in its next phase. Israel's Supreme Court has turned down an appeal by Palestinians to prevent the settlement expansion plan. Thousands of Israeli settlers live in settlements built since 1967 when Israel occupied the West Bank and Al-Quds. All Israeli settlements are considered illegal under international law. The UN has time and again condemned Israel's settlement expansion policy, calling on the regime to stop such activities. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have our correspondent, Moya Kandil, who's with us from Ramallah. Also, we have international lawyer Barry Grossman, who's joining us from Bali, Indonesia. Welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mona in Ramallah. Talk to us more about the Israeli increasement of settlement, their plans. Where is this area where land confiscation and settlement construction is to be carried out?
Well, this time the Israeli authorities had approved the plans for new settler units in the illegal settlement of Efrat. It's located 12 kilometers south of Al-Quds. It's in central, the occupied West Bank. The Israelis would be building new units, and this means at the expense would be of illegal confiscation of Palestinian lands south of Beit Lahem. Because at the end of the day, whether it would be expansion of the already their existing settlement or building a new settlement, these settlements are illegal according to the international law. These settlements are built on private Palestinian lands, are built on lands that are supposed to be part of the Palestinian state, and according to all the agreements that were reached previously, these settlements are illegal. According also to the report that was issued by the Palestinian Information Center, the new settlement plan would be the establishment of around 7,000 new settler units, or would be including or would be built as part of a new settlement in Beit Lahem.
Barry Grossman, settlements are without a doubt a major part of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. By further expanding these illegal settlements, does Israel actually declare that it has no commitments whatsoever to a so-called peace deal and to international law altogether?
Well, certainly people could be forgiven for drawing that inference, and it certainly is an inference which I draw and have drawn for a very long time. What the occupation is interested in is a complete capitulation by Palestinians. And if we look at the position taken by the occupation, of course, they have no commitment whatsoever to peace. They haven't even chosen to define what they consider their legitimate borders, because they aspire to taking on still more territory from other neighboring nations, including Jordan and Syria. And Lebanon and others. As for the settlements themselves, there's really no issue that can be legitimately argued. It's almost universally recognized, certainly by everyone except the occupation government, that these settlements are illegal, whether it's because they violate the Fourth Protocol of the Geneva Conventions, or because they violate other international declarations, or because they can be characterized as a war crime under the Rome statutes. It doesn't really matter. Israel's position has always been that they're not bound by the Geneva Conventions, and that while they may, on a de facto basis, make some concession to what is contemplated by the conventions as a matter of law, they do not consider themselves bound by the Geneva Conventions. That position has been soundly rejected over and over and over again by the United Nations General Assembly, by the Security Council, by the International Court of Justice, by the high contracting parties to the Geneva Conventions, and by the Red Cross. There's virtually no international institution or a recognized legal scholar that does not express the view that clear as day these settlements are illegal. But of course, whenever politics heat up in the occupied territories, whenever there's an election, or as we see now, we see Benjamin Netanyahu, who's still under indictment for serious crimes of corruption, scurrying around trying to put together an ultra-conservative coalition so he can rule once again. One of the first things they obviously do is they make commitments to expand these settlements, which even the Americans have always recognized as being illegal. And I might add, it seems to me that they're also a violation of the Oslo Accords. Not that the Oslo Accords are really worth the paper they're written on anymore. So there's no scope to argue in the face of all of these determinations, all of these positions, the many resolutions passed by the UN General Assembly and the Security Council, that this is okay or that it's legal. This is an illegal expansion, arguably a war crime, and cries out for some kind of remedy. But unfortunately, we're stuck with the position also championed by the United States, which states that this problem needs to be resolved as between Palestinians and the occupation without resort to international organization or outside help. It's like saying the Jews held in camps by the Nazis during World War II should have done whatever they could to look after themselves without receiving any help from outside agents, be it military agents or otherwise. It's an absurd position.
All right, thanks a lot. Damano Candil joining us from Ramallah. Also thanks to international lawyer Barry Grossman joining us from Bali, Indonesia. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. But do stay tuned. There's plenty more to come here. Welcome back. Ukraine is pressing the UN Security Council to take action against Russia's airstrikes, which it says have devastated its infrastructure in recent weeks.
We are awaiting a very firm reaction of the world to today's Russian terror, response of our partners, response of our friends, not just observers, but a reaction from all those who really recognize the UN Charter. We're doing everything possible. Ukraine represented a peace formula. The world heard it, 10 items in order to may empower the Charter of UN and violated by Russian guarantee security for Ukraine, Europe, and all the peoples of this planet suffering from the consequences of the Russian aggression.
Addressing an urgent meeting of the UN Security Council, Zelensky claimed that in the past 24 hours alone, Russia has fired more than 70 missiles at Ukraine. He said that the airstrikes have affected houses, schools, hospitals, and transportation systems. Moldova's permanent representative to the UN also condemned Russia's attacks on Ukraine, saying the strikes have taken a toll on his country as well. He said more than half of Moldova was left without electricity last week, with some areas still experiencing power outages. Also speaking at the same session was Russia's envoy, who offered Moscow's narrative of the events.
The damage to residential housing and victims among the peaceful population is indeed caused by the Ukrainian air defense systems, which are not located at the outskirts of the cities, but in the very center. As a result, the missiles, those that hit those places which Russia never targeted. So, for example, today, users posted photos on the internet of missiles that hit residential homes in Kyiv. Turns out that these were American air defense missiles, which were supplied to Kyiv.
Well, the Russian envoy also criticized Kyiv and its Western supporters for their threats and ultimatums. Moscow denies carrying out attacks on non-military targets. It has also condemned the West for covering up the crimes of the Ukrainian military in pro-Russia areas. UK energy companies will increase gas and electricity prices from January, forcing the government to raise its price cap. Britain's energy regulator Ofgem said that companies can charge more for energy from next year, but households will be protected from the price hike. Under the Energy Price Guarantee EPG, the typical household is currently paying £2,500 a year for energy, but Ofgem says without government support, households would have paid £4,200 from January. The price cap was introduced in October. This comes amid concerns about the cost of the EPG at a time when the government's debt is rising. Analysts at Cornwall Insights have said that capping gas and electricity prices for the next 2 years could cost up to £140 billion. Europe is facing its worst energy crisis in decades due to the fallout from the Ukraine war and the COVID-19 pandemic. And EU Home Affairs ministers are set to hold an emergency meeting on Friday to discuss the growing refugee crisis in the 27-nation bloc. This as lawmakers in the European Parliament are critical of the EU's treatment of refugees. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
The recent decision by Italy to close its ports to the Ocean Viking vessel carrying 234 refugees has been slated in the European Parliament. The vessel, operated by a charity, was eventually allowed to dock in France. Asylum applications have increased by 60% in the EU during the past 12 months. That figure is separate from those arriving from Ukraine. In fact, the 27 EU nations are providing maximum support to Ukrainians, while those from other countries are often forced to sleep on the streets.
How dare so many of you define yourself as Christians and repeat that you are defending Christian values when your ideas and your actions are proof of the opposite.
In the Mediterranean alone, 2,000 refugees have drowned so far this year, according to the International Organization for Migration. The message seems to be, if you're not one of the 4 million Ukrainians who have arrived in the EU in recent months, you're not welcome. It's suggested war hawks in the US and NATO don't give a damn about the millions of people who have been displaced through military intervention in countries such as Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen and Libya. Apparently, the far right is flourishing in the EU due to the bloc's neglect of refugees.
How did Lega get big? How did the AfD get big? How did Marine Le Pen get big? It's all by capitalising on the fears of migration.
The ascent of the extreme right in the EU is certainly bad news for asylum seekers, according to analysts.
What this is doing is this is leading to a rise in xenophobia. These refugees, these people who, as I said, are at the lowest possible ebb, are now being subject to abuse and to hate crimes.
EU Home Affairs ministers will hold an emergency meeting on the refugee crisis this Friday. There's a great deal of scepticism that anything will be achieved. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. Britain's biggest supermarket chain, Tesco, has limited its customers to 3 boxes of eggs as avian flu outbreak hits supplies. Tesco has become the latest grocer to ration eggs due to supply issues. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. Tesco has become the latest grocer to ration eggs due to supply issues. Customers are now limited to buying 3 boxes of eggs at the checkout because of the dual blows to poultry farmers of rising costs and an avian flu outbreak. Tesco, Britain's biggest supermarket chain, follows Asda and Lidl in setting limits after they restricted purchases last week. At the time, the retailer said it had good availability with no limits, but now a temporary rationing policy has been brought in. Tesco said it is working hard with its suppliers to ensure a good supply of eggs, but has taken the step as a precautionary measure. British farmers have been hit by soaring energy costs in recent months, and the price of wheat has risen because of the conflict in Ukraine. The grain is a key component in chicken feed. They have also warned about the lack of money they get from supermarkets for the sale of eggs. At the same time, Britain's largest ever avian flu outbreak has led the government to tell farmers to keep all poultry and captive birds indoors. There have been 252 cases of the virus since the outbreak began in October of last year, with 118 of them coming since 1st of October this year. Millions of birds have died or been culled in the last year. The government announced on Monday, 21st of November, that a bird flu outbreak had been found at a farm near Barnard Castle in Durham. All birds at the site will be culled, and a 3-kilometre protection zone and a 10-kilometre surveillance zone have been set up. After some supermarket restrictions were announced last week, the Director of Food and Sustainability at the British Retail Consortium, Andrew Opie, said, "While avian flu has disrupted the supply of some egg ranges, retailers are experts at managing supply chains and are working hard to minimise impact on customers. Some stores have introduced temporary limits to the number of boxes of eggs customers can buy to ensure availability for everyone." British newspaper The Express has more for us. Tesco is the latest UK supermarket chain to limit egg buying to only 3 boxes per customer. It comes after Asda and Lidl set similar rations last week. British poultry farmers currently face rising costs for chicken feed and energy, at the same time as being hit by an outbreak of bird flu. It has led to a squeeze on the supply of eggs on supermarket shelves. Tesco said last week that they had good availability with no limits on buying, but was nonetheless working to protect supplies with producers. As a result, it has introduced a temporary rationing policy following Lidl's decision to limit egg boxes to 3 per customer. Similarly, Asda has set a 2-box limit per customer, with other grocers such as Morrisons and Sainsbury's being yet to make any rationing policies. Sainsbury's has said some stores are running low on eggs and supplies have been sourced from Italy. This is despite the fact that they preciously committed to buying eggs only from British suppliers. Morrisons has previously said it was not facing supply issues. Alongside households, farmers too have been hit by rapidly rising energy costs. They have also had to buy more wheat, a key ingredient in chicken feed, which has risen as a result of the war in Ukraine. Both Russia and Ukraine are producing about 30% of the global supply of wheat. But perhaps more frightening for British farmers is the country's largest ever avian influenza outbreak. The outbreak has led to millions of birds being killed in the past 12 months in the United Kingdom. British farmers have said despite the price of dozen eggs having risen by 45 pence in supermarkets since last March, they've only received between 5 pence and 10 pence of that increase and are not being paid a fair price for their eggs. Therese Coffey, the Secretary of State for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, has said in the past that she is not concerned about the overall supply of eggs in Britain. The British newspaper, the Daily Mail, has also covered the same story. Tesco has become the latest major supermarket chain to impose rationing of eggs. Customers are restricted to 3 boxes as bird flu disrupts major supply chains. Last week it was reported that Asda and Lidl had also set limits on eggs for shoppers. The United Kingdom is facing its largest ever bout of bird flu with a highly pathogenic variant. Tesco has joined other supermarkets in limiting the number of boxes of eggs customers can buy as the impact of rising costs and bird flu continue to take their toll. The shopping chain said it had introduced a temporary buying limit of 3 boxes of eggs per customer as a precautionary measure. Earlier this month, Asda and Lidl announced limits on egg purchases at some of their stores. The National Farmers Union, the NFU, has called for an urgent investigation into the egg supply chain disruption. The National Farmers Union said the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, should look into whether a declaration should be made under the Agriculture Act 2020 to ensure much-needed support for egg producers. The government said the situation is being monitored but insisted the United Kingdom's food supply chain is resilient and that no significant impact is expected. The Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs spokesperson said, "We understand the difficulties that rising costs combined with the bird flu outbreak are causing for farmers and we are working with industry to monitor the egg market. Britain's food supply chain is resilient. There are 38 million laying hens across the country and we are not expecting any significant impact to the overall supply of eggs." The National Farmers Union, NFU, said a declaration under Section 20 of the Agriculture Act would enable DEFRA to use its statutory powers to provide much-needed support to egg producers whose livelihoods are under threat. The National Farmers Union president, Minette Batters, said it is critical that the government acts now to give egg producers the confidence that they need.
From our Imams, the ninth Imam is the first, whose Imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Ja'far, Muhammad ibn Ali al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Ja'far, Muhammad the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the ninth divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Messenger of Allah. And His Eminence Imam al-Jawad was also the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him. We find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam economized when it came to spending upon himself. He lived a rather ascetic, simple lifestyle. But His Eminence Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam spent a great abundant amount of wealth on the poor and the needy people amongst the Muslims. And it is precisely because of this unequaled and unparalleled generosity that Imam al-Jawad has been called and titled Al-Jawad, the Generous. This surname was the most particular and famous surname of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, to the extent that he was well known and famous for it amongst the people.
Parts of Ziyarat Texts of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaykum ayyuhan nur as-safi. Assalamu alaykum ayyuhal badr al-talim.
Peace be upon you, O shining light. Peace be upon you, O rising full moon. Peace be upon you, O pure one from among the pure ones. Peace be upon you, O immaculate from among the immaculate ones. Peace be upon you, O pleased and pure. Peace be upon you, O Aba Ja'far, Muhammad the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious, the faithful leader, and Allah's mercy and blessings be upon you.
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. So, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam has these beautiful conversations and these beautiful dialogues with his friends and his relatives, his companions, his near ones, and with the people in general. We find that during the era of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, which was during the caliphate of the Abbasids, and this is primarily after Ma'mun al-Rashid, the Abbasid caliph, that we find Imam al-Jawad lives his life. Now, in this era of moral corruption, moral decadence, we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam put forth this cure and this prescription and this medication for the Muslim Ummah, which was done via these moral and ethical traditions and conversations that His Eminence relayed and transmitted to the people. In one such conversation, we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam spoke about the devotion to Allah. Now, again, when we look at the circumstances and conditions that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam lived in, we find that this devotion to Allah over a period of decades had really reached a low. And so it was the divinely appointed imams, and in this case it was Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, whom brought certain things back to the surface, and they reminded the people and they
you know, brought new life into the people. And one of these things was he was asked about devotion to Allah. We find that in the life of Imam al-Jawad, he urged upon the devotion to Allah because this devotion to Allah, if nothing else, should be in response to the abundant gifts and the blessings and the mercy that is constantly being given to us by the Almighty Allah. And we also find in this era that the people really tried to get close to the governmental establishments in order to be able to gain some sort of benefit. And again, we find that Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salam, he speaks about how if someone devotes themselves to other than Allah, they will lose and they will become disappointed and they will not attain what they are looking for. And so in this conversation, eventually we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam says, whoever devotes himself to other than Allah, Allah entrusts him to him. And so first and foremost, this devotion to Allah, of course, in that era, was this trying to become close to the governmental establishments. And this was happening on quite a large scale, because of course it was via the governmental establishment of the Abbasids that one was able to really acquire a lot of stuff. I mean, the governmental establishment of the Abbasids was quite corrupt in this sense. And so here Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam in this conversation with one of his companions is trying to explain to the people that we need to devote ourselves to Allah, not to a certain governmental establishment, especially if it's an anti-Islamic governmental establishment. To the point where Imam al-Jawad tells his companion that, listen, if you devote yourself to one other than Allah, Allah will leave you to that person. And so in our example, Allah will leave us at the behest and at the desires and the whims of the un-Islamic governmental establishments or the un-Islamic people or individuals of this sort. And so why entrust ourselves to somebody other than Allah when we know that it is Allah the Almighty who is the All-Powerful, the All-Wise, and the one whom we should be ultimately and completely devoted to? This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to a shorter speech by Sheikh Ayub Rashid.
Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Within our communities, sometimes we find these kind of people. Those who decided to stay on the edge. Well, wallah, we don't know, can we join or not? They are confused. They wait until for things to progress and then they join. So the waqifiyah, they stop to follow Imam al-Jawad until when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala decided to prove to them through the debates of Imam al-Jawad, then they saw that, yes, we can follow him even though he is young. And I don't know why sometimes human beings forget, while in the Holy Quran, which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has revealed it to be our guide, it is clearly we read within the verses of the Holy Quran that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَآتَيْنَاهُ الْحُكْمَ صَبِيًّا. When you talk about Nabiullah Isa alayhi wa ala nabiyyina salam, وَآتَيْنَاهُ الْحُكْمَ صَبِيًّا. Allah says clearly, we have given him knowledge, wisdom, when he was a young person. Why? Because the leadership, which is known as imama, it's not for people to choose. Nubuwa, it's not for people to choose ayu nabiyyin, which messenger they can follow. It is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and he has his own plan.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Basij, Islamic Revolution's Fruitful Tree. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. One of the obvious characteristics of Imam Khomeini was his foresightedness and acumen. He would make decisions whose accuracy and importance would be known later on. For instance, less than 10 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, he thought that in order to safeguard the revolution and the country, it was necessary to have an organized and trained body. Thus, the Imam issued the order of establishment of such an organization on November 26, 1979, which came to be known later on as Basij Mostaz'afin, meaning Volunteers of the Oppressed. Then, 10 months after this order, the Iraqi dictator Saddam, at the behest of his masters in Washington and Moscow, initiated an all-out aggression against Iran and the Islamic Revolution to overthrow the Islamic Republic system. In those days, the unique and fateful role of the Basij forces was revealed to all. Imam Khomeini said, "If we want to present a perfect manifestation of self-sacrifice, sincerity and love of God and Islam, who will deserve more than Basij and Basijis?" The Basij commemoration week in Iran marks the countless selfless efforts of Basij mobilization force which have been carried out for the elevation and honor of Iran. Stay with us for an exclusive feature on this occasion. The outstanding characteristics of Basij forces caused Imam Khomeini and Ayatollah Khamenei to praise them and use lofty words and phrases to describe them, perhaps the loftiest phrase that the two leaders of the Islamic Revolution have used is Shajaraye Tayyebe, meaning pure and sweet-smelling tree. This has been adopted from ayahs 24 and 25 of Surah Ibrahim of the Noble Quran. There, God likens pure word to a pure tree whose roots are fixed in the earth while its branches are in the sky, yielding fruit whenever God permits. Ayatollah Khamenei describes besieged forces with reference to these ayahs. You besieges are the sweet-smelling and pure fruits of that tree which the great Imam planted. This fruitfulness will continue, just as God says. Have you now seen how God gave a parable of a pure word, resembling a pure tree whose root is firm and whose branch is in the heaven, yielding its fruit every time by the permission of its Lord? When the field is favorable and ready and the seed is pure, that plant is not terminable. I mean that no factor can harm it. Besieged is such a sweet-smelling and pure tree. According to Ayatollah Khamenei, the sapling of besieged, which had been planted by Imam Khomeini absolutely for God's satisfaction, has turned into a strong and sturdy tree with firm roots and ample branches that bears new fruits on different occasions. Besieged has proved its unending potentials for solving intricate problems and removing various obstacles in every domain. This lofty status of besieged is originated in the divine virtues such as spirituality, sincerity, popularity, insight, religious awareness, submission to the leader, purity, humbleness, simplicity, inexhaustibility, and constant preparedness for every job. Besieged has turned into a role model for other freedom-seeking nations. Today, Lebanon, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, occupied Palestine, Nigeria, and other places have learned the model of besieged in their fight against oppressive and colonialist regimes and elements. Principally, any person or group that works with pure intention for the sake of serving the poor and downtrodden masses, God will exalt it in the eyes of people. The characteristics of besieged were manifested during the 8-year holy defense in the best way. These characteristics continued after the end of the war in the form of helping the poor, assisting those hurt in different events, safeguarding the security of country and health programs such as nationwide vaccination, etc. Currently, since the outbreak of coronavirus in the country, besieged forces have participated in a variety of activities to hamper the spread of the deadly disease and aid the low-income classes who have lost their job. Ayatollah Khamenei says, wherever there is a struggle, there is besieged. Struggle in the field of knowledge, struggle in the field of politics, struggle in the field of social activities, struggle in the vast field and great international arena. These struggles continue and will continue. Elsewhere in his remarks, the leader enumerates the features of this jihadi spirit, saying, work for God and as a duty, not forgetting the ideals, using all forces and capacities, relentless, inexhaustible, and enthusiastic effort, trust in the youth, and belief in the principle of we can. Dear listeners, the important point about besieged is to preserve and bolster valuable divine characteristics. Ayatollah Khamenei keeps stressing a strengthening of moral virtues to all youths, especially Basiji youth. He reiterates to them to work without expecting any reward or even encouragement. Like Imam Khomeini, he highlights the principle that a member of Basiji should work only for God. ¶¶ Insight is another characteristic of Basij. Ayatollah Khamenei says, "Dear youth, dear Basijis, wherever that you are in the country, increase this insight day by day. Do not let some material needs and paltry issues prevent insight. Protect your insights and know your enemy. The enemy has various stratagems, and that nation will be successful which is not deceived." On the importance of acquiring modern sciences and technologies for Basijis, Ayatollah Khamenei says, "Basij should enter the arena of knowledge ahead of all. You should go and capture the unknown scientific vistas, technological vistas, and innovative vistas." In other words, he believes that Basij should be equipped with two tools of knowledge and faith in order to be helpful in diverse spheres of services to the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic Ummah. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, said, "I always envy of the sincerity and purity of Basijis and appeal to God to resurrect me with Basijis, as in this world I am honored to be a Basiji."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies.
31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran.
You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble Hadith, which has been narrated from Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. This Hadith is about the rights that brothers in faith have upon one another. Imam Baqir alayhi salam said, among the rights of the believer upon his fellow believing brother is to satisfy his hunger. You know, before we explain the Hadith, it's good to remind our listeners that every person has a series of rights over other people, and they also have rights upon him. A father has rights upon his children, and vice versa. Spouses have rights upon one another. You know, and then we also have responsibilities. Each party has a certain responsibilities. We have rights with respect to God and, you know, the Prophet and our Aima alayhi salam, and vice versa. You know, these are all rights. A good book to refer to in this regarding reciprocal rights is the Risala-e-Huquq, the Treatise on Rights, famous treaty by Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. In this beautiful hadith, Imam Baqir alayhi salam elucidates and explains the rights that a believer has upon his fellow brother in faith. The first one that he mentions is that he should satisfy the hunger of his fellow believer, meaning if his fellow believer is hungry, you know, he should provide him food, you know, provided that his fellow believer cannot feed himself. Secondly, he should cover his body if his believer, you know, doesn't have clothes to wear, right? Proper clothes to wear. His children doesn't have proper clothes to wear. He should help him in this respect. Third, he should solve his problems in general. He should solve his problems. He has some problems and he cannot take care of it. He's, you know, sad or he's depressed or he has certain difficulties. He should help him in the resolution of those difficulties. Fourth, he should pay his debt. For example, let's say that he's fallen into debt and, you know, he cannot get out of it for whatever reason. He should help him in repaying his debt. Finally, the Imam said that when he dies, to substitute him in his family and his children. And if he dies at an improper time and, you know, his family is in need of a, you know, somebody to take care of them, monetarily or, you know, spiritually or psychologically, emotionally, he should try to help his brother in faith's family and his children, and fill the gap that, you know, that person's death might have left, to the extent that is lawful and permitted in religion. Imam Sadiq is also reported to have said, he who honors the religion of Allah honors the right of his brethren, and he who takes his religion lightly takes the right of his brethren lightly. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the rights of brothers in faith upon one another in the words of Imam Baqir alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum. Rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.